You're listening to the official Euro 2020 podcast in association with Qatar Airways. It's been a long wait, but UEFA Euro 2020 is almost here.
Yes, 24 teams playing 51 matches in 11 cities, and the fans are back. Every nation wants to win the big prize.
Here comes Eden. Not got much help.
It was Portugal's year in 2016, whose name is on the trophy this summer.
This is our official preview podcast. We're going to tell you everything you need to know ahead of the tournament, and we'll hear from England forward Raheem Sterling, Wales winger Gareth Bale, and Poland boss Paulo Sousa. Okay, welcome to the official Euro 2020 podcast sponsored by Qatar Airways. I'm Rob Daly, and with me, my co-host and European football expert, Chris Parrott. Hello, Chris.
Almost here, Rob. Cannot wait.
Yeah, we're going to be spending too much time together this summer. Also
Certainly.
With us today is our reporter, Lindsay Hooper. Lindsay, great to have you on the preview show.
Thank you very much for having me. How exciting is this? We've got a whole tournament to look forward to this summer.
And Lindsay, you're going to be spending a lot of time in fan parks as well. So we've got that going on in a lot of the host cities. And of course, we've got fans back in the stadium. It's going to be great fun.
It will, and hopefully by the knockout stages, fingers crossed, we should get even more in stadia. We should see pretty much full-on stadiums, and to see fans back just celebrating goals, to see it in full again will be amazing.
It's interesting, Chris, because you know we go into a tournament normally and you go, oh, the host nation, you know, maybe you look at France in 2016. It was an advantage as they got to the final. There's a lot of teams here that have got a little bit of a boost going into some tricky group games as well.
Yeah, and remember, because we don't have one single host, everyone has had to qualify for this competition. But we can look through it, you know, the support that Hungary are going to get, that the Netherlands are going to get in Amsterdam, that England are going to get, not just with some of the group games, but also both the semi-finals and the final. It's not quite a home tournament for England, but if they were to get to the last four in the final, it might well feel like one.
Now let's do some of our favourite Euro moments to get things going, a bit of nostalgia. And I will kick things off by going not that far back, only 5 years now, to Hal Robson-Kanu's Cruyff turn against Belgium as they knocked them out in the quarterfinals. An incredible moment in 2016. Lindsay, what springs to mind for you?
One of the ones would be the 92 tournament, because Denmark went on to win. They weren't even meant to be in that tournament. They replaced Yugoslavia, who were disqualified. And what a story that was. So I think we all like the underdog. Most of us pick a team like that to try and support, as well as our own team. So Denmark would stand out for me in that Sweden tournament.
Yeah, actually, I'm going to pick another one similar to Denmark. If that was one of the great footballing or sporting shocks of all time, well, Greece winning it in 2004 was as well, when they won it in Portugal and they beat Portugal in the final. This has always been a competition, a final tournament that you can never discount anything, frankly. We've seen great goals, some of the greatest ever moments in football, and I think Greece winning it, that winning header, those celebration in Athens, that will stick with me for a long time.
Even Portugal really winning it 5 years ago, it was a bit of a surprise, especially how they were doing in the group. And we'll get on to that. This is, of course, the preview podcast. And Chris, it's worth noting for listeners as well, we have a live show for people every match day throughout the tournament.
Yes, so the Euro show is going to be a one-hour debate programme. It'll be broadcast live on the official app and on Euro2020.com every match day, just a few minutes after the last match has ended. So our first show is this Friday, the 11th of June, after Turkey versus Italy has ended in Rome. Straight after that match, we'll be on 11 p.m. Central European Summer Time.
And if you can't listen live, it's not a problem, because you can get your recap in the morning as a podcast, the official Euro 2020 podcast. Too. We analyse all the day's results, and then we'll be looking ahead to the upcoming fixtures with some of the biggest names around. And people can get in touch with us for that show, Chris.
Yeah, please do, on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook using the hashtag EuroShow. We want your predictions, questions for our team or any of the former players we're going to have on, and photos, please. We love this. Where in the world you'll be listening to the official podcast and the official Euro Show.
Let's run through the groups in the format. I think we've got some good music for you as well for this bit.
OK, so the first European Championship was held in 1960. This is the 16th final tournament, only the second with 24 teams, though, and it means they are split into six groups of four. The top two will go through to the last 16+. The four best-ranked third-place teams And remember, 5 years ago, Portugal won it after finishing third in their group. So these are the groups for UEFA Euro 2020. In Group A, we have Turkey, Italy, Wales and Switzerland. Group B, Denmark, Finland, Belgium and Russia. Group C, the Netherlands, Ukraine, Austria and North Macedonia. Group D, England, Croatia, Scotland and Czech Republic. In Group E, Spain, Sweden, Poland and Slovakia. Group F is Hungary, Portugal, France and Germany. What a section. So those are all of the groups. The matches are being played in 11 different cities across Europe. They are Amsterdam, Baku, Bucharest, Budapest, Copenhagen, Glasgow, London, Munich, Rome, St. Petersburg and Seville in the south of Spain. And as I've mentioned, London's Wembley Stadium hosting the most games of any of those cities, including both semi-finals and the final on Sunday, the 11th of July.
Chris did that without even checking his notes. Great stuff, mate. Okay, we've got loads to get through and I want to dive straight into our predictions for Euro 2020 as a whole. And it is still called Euro 2020, yeah, even though we are in 2021. Let's talk about who do you think are the strongest team going into this competition?
I'm not going to blow anyone away with anything different to saying the favourites, which is France, because I feel like they've got the backup in every single position. So you look at the squad depth going in. There are some very talented teams, very talented players, as we know. But things happen during tournaments. Injuries happen. Sometimes they happen, Kevin De Bruyne, just before you start a tournament. But they definitely happen partway through. And I think the depth of squad is going to be really important. I can't see past France.
That's interesting, actually, Chris, because a lot of people, and I think Lindsay's right to mention it there, in terms of fatigue and off the back of, you know, we've had this very condensed period of football really since, what, May 2020 to now. I mean, people are going to be delving deep into those expanded squads.
They are, and I think particularly teams who rely on, you know, non-stop press, which we see a lot nowadays, certainly in the club game, but also increasingly in international football. I think those teams might just struggle to keep that level of intensity because a lot of players have played 50, 60 games. And as you've mentioned, off the back of a very short summer a year ago. So how that is going to happen, we shall see. It's difficult to disagree with Lindsay on that one with France because also, well, how do you improve on being world champions in Russia 3 years ago? I know, you bring in Karim Benzema out from the international wilderness just to add even more strength. And that front three, which would almost certainly start France's opening game, of Mbappe, Benzema and Griezmann. I mean, that is frightening.
It is certainly is. Benzema back in the national team for the first time in more than 5 years, scored 30 goals for Real Madrid this season. Portugal are the defending champions. We heard that moment at the top of the show where Eder belted in that goal in France against the host nation to win the final. And of course, Lindsay, it's that absolutely mad group of death, isn't it? France, Germany, Hungary, Portugal. What's funny, group of death sounds so sinister, actually, when you actually think about it. It seems a bit needless. You're just going to get knocked out of a football tournament. But I mean, I would argue, actually, that three of the four best squads are in this group. That I think France, Germany and Portugal, along with England, who many people are rating, Lindsay, are among the best. What do you think to that group of death, as it has been called?
It makes it so exciting for a neutral watching, doesn't it? Because we know that one of the big hitters is going home. And I don't think we should underestimate Hungary. They could have a say in who that team will be. It's going to be interesting. We will move on because I've picked out a couple of games in this group
sure.
for us to talk through okay. later. But yeah, I think it's going to be some of the best tactical matches that we'll see.
It brings us nicely into all of our groups. So let's start pinging around them. Six sections to get through. And we'll start with Group D, England, Croatia, Scotland and the Czech Republic. For England, they are one of the favourites, despite some of the inexperience in the group. So can an experienced player like Manchester City forward Raheem Sterling play a key role now to help England win their first major tournament since 1966? Euro 2020's final venue is extra special for the 26-year-old, brought up just down the road from Wembley. He's even got a tattoo on his arm of himself as a young boy looking up at the famous stadium.
Earliest memories of living there, I can see it just riding my bike around the area, exploring, you know, this new area that I'm in. As a child, you know, when I used to see the stadium being built, it was always in the back of my mind. I was like, wow, this is crazy. Wow, that's amazing. I wish I could one day play in that stadium. And then once seeing it fully built, you know, and it's towering over your house. It was spectacular. You know, I said my tattoos, I like to have meaning behind them. And, you know, I'd done it because I was like, you know, I've got a real opportunity here to hopefully play in this stadium a lot more. It's my home, and it's something that I felt like, you know, in the future would have some meaning, because it's always been a dream of mine. And every time I want a reminder, I just look down on my arm.
Well, it might run for Sterling anyway. Raheem Sterling! It certainly suits England. A second for Sterling on the night. A third for England just past the hour mark.
The form that he's in. He's a confident man in these situations now.
Everyone here now is, you know, looking forward to it. Of course, it's the Euros and whatnot. But for me, it's like, you know, it's a childhood actual dream. Like, I used to say to myself, like, I want to play there. And now to actually play here, not just with England, but with Man City as well. It's remarkable every time I go back there. And now to actually play with the national team, like, which has been a dream of mine ever since, you know, seeing the stadium being built at a major tournament. Yeah, it's a dream come true for real.
My memory going into the FIFA 2018 World Cup was a lot of talk about the fact that Raheem Sterling did not score much for England, and he did actually go 27 games. It's crazy now to think about it, without scoring for England. But I wonder what the extra year's done in terms of his place in this England team, Lindsay, because 31 goals for Manchester City in 2019-20 was one of the standout players in the Premier League. Only 14 goals, not playing as much, of course, did surprisingly start the Champions League final. What do you think the extra year's done to his prospects of starting England's opener?
It's probably not done him too well in terms of his prospects of starting, especially for this game against Croatia, because he's had so much competition at Manchester City, and despite them winning a lot, he's not been involved in that latter second period of the season as much. So that won't have done him any good, I suppose, from the point of view of Gareth Southgate picking players that have got current form, because he hasn't seen as much of him as he would have hoped. However, I think that Sterling has a huge part to play. I don't think we should underestimate the value that he brings to this England team. A lot with his running, a lot with the fact that he's very forward thinking and brings and draws defenders out of position. And this could really suit him this game against Croatia. So I would be really disappointed if he didn't start. I am in that camp that I think Raheem Sterling should start this game. This is a chance for him to announce himself and to say to his club manager as well, you know, you should be starting me every week next season.
But I also think this is why England are one of the favourites. The fact we are discussing whether Raheem Sterling should start or not. And this is the strength that England have, particularly going forward. I think there are question marks about the defence, particularly Harry Maguire. Is he going to be fit enough for the second game? I think the first game will be a huge push. Gareth Southgate's pretty much said that he's very unlikely to play against Croatia. And I think this is why there is such excitement about this England team, because they have so many options. And if you remember, before Gareth Southgate, the amount of England coaches, I remember Sam Allardyce in his short spell, Fabio Capello definitely saying it, bemoaning the fact that at the top English clubs in the Premier League and at the back end of the UEFA Champions League, that there weren't English players playing a major part for those teams. That's all changed. You only have to look at the Champions League final of this season. Reece James, Phil Foden, Mason Mount. That is why there is the expectation on this English team. There is the pressure on this England team, because the quality that they have now is enormous.
And I remember off the back of the Croatia World Cup semi-final defeat, a lot of the talk was about where are those very technically gifted players like Luka Modric in the middle of the pitch.
Loads of them.
And I think we have lots of them, particularly for Phil Foden from an England point of view. England manager Gareth Southgate says free kicks could help England win the Euro.
It's such an important facet of the game, and you know, it's an area we pay a lot of attention to, and we think we should. I think more and more you see every big match often comes down to set plays at either end. So we're fortunate that we've got a lot of players who can deliver really consistently. And sometimes the set plays don't have to be overcomplicated, but if the delivery is no good, then none of those planned moves get off the ground. And we've got that consistency of delivery from seven or eight different players, and that's a real asset for us.
Okay, so they take on a Croatia side, Chris, who were the World Cup runners-up in 2018, did beat England at that tournament. But you get the sense, despite the fact that Luka Modric is still in the side, that with the ageing players like Ivan Perisic and Dejan Lovren, and many of those stars from 3 years ago, not really involved anymore, they're not the same force that they were.
They're not. I think I would never, ever write off a team with Luka Modric, who has just extended his deal at Real Madrid. And actually, I think at the second half of this season, there were certainly times when Modric did look like he was at his peak once more. I think if you look, it's probably Lovren and Vida still at the heart of the defence. It's probably still Brozovic and Modric in midfield. I think the big change from Russia at the FIFA World Cup, when, you know, they went all the way to the final, of course, is there's no Mario Mandzukic. Now, he was absolutely inked into that 11 for so many years. And you think, OK, who is going to provide that focal point? And this is a tough section, I think. We'll get onto it. But both Scotland and Czech Republic will fancy their chances of finishing second. I think England are big favourites in this group. But beyond that, I think it's really hard to call who is going to go through.
Scotland are back in the competition, of course, for the first time since Euro 96, and they faced England at Wembley, and the two sides will be reunited for the oldest international fixture in the world. This is what Scotland head coach Steve Clarke thinks about that match.
The banter's always going to be there. It's a historic game in football. It goes back a long way. It means a lot. And people say it doesn't mean much to the English, but having worked in England, I know it means a lot to the English. They don't want to lose to Scotland, and it's the same on the other way. You know how passionate we are. You know how much we enjoy beating the English. It hasn't happened too often recently. But I've been part of squads that beat England. I remember Richard Gough's header at Hampden for a 1-0. I was sitting on the bench, didn't get on the pitch, but it's always nice to do it. And I think the thing that the English try to play it down a little bit as if it's little Scotland, but it means a lot to the English as well, so it should be a good game. Roll on June the 18th.
Steve Clarke there speaking to Graham Hunter. More of that interview on Euro2020.com. Lindsay, I think the celebrations from Scotland's Nations League playoff win over Serbia just illustrated how huge it was for them to be back at a major finals for the first time since the 98 World Cup.
Yeah, and this is a side that we've got to take so seriously. They've got so much talent in this team. And Andy Robertson, you've got Kieran Tierney, John McGinn, McTominay, Stuart Armstrong at Southampton, Ryan Fraser. I think this is going to be the game of the group, actually, England-Scotland. And it is all about how many goals can Dyche score? Because if you've got all these players that are able, from the wing, like Tierney and different people, to create chances, who's going to put their boot on the end of it?
Yeah, and it looks like they're going to play three at the back, partly so they can fit Tierney and Robertson into the same team. And fair play to Steve Clarke for doing that. You see a lot of national teams where you have an overload in one position and can't necessarily mould them into an 11, whereas I think Steve Clarke has done that very successfully. I think, yeah, when you look at their squad, it does look a little weighted towards them being excellent at the back. And I think, you know, Lindsay mentioned Scott McTominay there. He has had an unbelievably good season at Manchester United, and he perhaps can be that driving force if he plays in midfield. He's played in the back three quite a bit.
I think he'll want him in midfield. He's too important.
He's too important to
not play in midfield.
I think John McGinn has emerged as probably one of the outside of the so-called big six, one of the best players for a team in the Premier League at Aston Villa. And Scotland are another team who have home matches. Hampden's not going to be full, but
yeah,
they back themselves. And I think I'm right in saying Scotland have never been into the knockout stages of a major international tournament. So they've got a great old chance.
That's right, out in the group stage, 92 and 96. The Czech Republic, of course, are in the competition regulars on the European stage. And Czechoslovakia actually won the competition, you may remember, in 1976. I suppose from a Premier League point of view as well here, Lindsay, there's players in that side that have sort of come to the fore, in particular in the West Ham United shirt.
Yes, and you know, Suchek is going to be one of the key players, isn't he, for Czech Republic in this. You look at the quality that they've got across the pitch. I think these are a really together side, Czech Republic. It might not have your dazzling stars, your superstars on the pitch, but what they do is they work really, really hard for each other. And I think they've shown that in the last few performances they've put in. Suchek is who everyone in the Premier League will be familiar with, but they've got lots of talent here. And I think it's the high energy, it's the high press. I think they're the sort of team that can really ask questions of your likes of England, Scotland, and how good those defences are at holding up, because they will press. They will continue to do it.
If I think back to Czech Republic and goal scorers who did it in this tournament, I think of Milan Baroš. Mm. And maybe, you know, you just need a good 3 or 4 weeks. That's all you need. And suddenly you've got a golden boot to take.
Did he finish his joint top scorer?
He did, yeah.
That's a very good point. Yeah. Things happen.
Yeah, things happen.
You know, yeah, they do. Yeah.
Okay, so England, Croatia, and then Scotland, Czech Republic, the opening games in that group. Let's get on to some other groups now. We want to let you know about the matches in the group stage that you simply can't miss. Some might be more obvious than others. We've picked out two games each, haven't we, panel? channel, and these are the ones we think you need to watch. So, Lindsay, you can get us up and running, and unsurprisingly, you're delving into Group F, the group of death.
What happened here is that you let me go first, so I picked all the brilliant ones, so apologies for that. But France versus Germany, we can't move away from that in a group stage as well. How many times have we seen this? In a group stage at a major tournament, not very many. I think it's the first time, actually, that they've met in a World Cup or a Euros at this stage. It will be the way of setting out this tournament, I think, as to who's going to be the favourite going into the knockout stages. And it's like you said, if either of these drop points in this game, there's huge pressure on them from there. France, I think, have got the edge here because they've lost just one of their 10 qualification games, haven't they? They've got this abundance and talent and the backup, like I said, in depth in squad. And they've only lost one competitive match against Germany since 1986. They're going to feel pretty confident going into this.
And of course, this is Jogi Löw's last hurrah. He's being replaced, we know, by Hansi Flick at the end of this summer's UEFA European Championships. If you look at on paper the team they might be able to pick, and some of the players: Neuer, Rudiger, Gundogan, Kroos, Sane, Goretzka, Kimmich, Gnabry, who has a great goal scoring record for his country. If they can click, and if they can solve some of the problems they've had over the last 3-4 years. Then, of course, they'll be dangerous. If they're in any other section, I'd be very confident them at least getting to the last 16. It's just the fact they're with Portugal and France.
There is one more narrative at play here as well when you look at the Euros as a whole. And the joint record of Euro winners is Germany level with Spain. They've got 3 Euro championships each. But that's one ahead of France. France could level it up. That's the other narrative.
Yeah, and Germany last won it when Wembley hosted the final back in 1996. Had to recall Thomas Müller. I think 15 goals and 24 assists was sort of out of the squad, along with Mats Hummels and Jeroen Boateng, off the back of the disappointment of their early exit at the 2018 FIFA World Cup. Your second fixture from this group doesn't feature Germany, Lindsay. Wednesday, the 23rd of June, 2100 CEST. What's the game?
It does feature France again. You can't not go for the European holders against the world champions, because this is it. It's Portugal against France. France, who dethroned Portugal in the UEFA Nations League as well. There's some there. There's also this bit of bite around Ronaldo and what he can do, because especially when Portugal did actually get the trophy, obviously we saw him go off and effectively turn into the coach on the sidelines, didn't we?
Yeah, it was great.
Highest scorer in Serie A this season. Can he do it again? And I just think that this is the question mark. It's like, who is going into this as favourites? Is it the reigning holders or is it the world champions?
I think when you're looking at squads, I think it's very difficult to argue that France don't have the best squad on paper. Portugal are right in the conversation for the second strongest squad, I think. For once, they have another proper old school centre forward who is been on the season of his life in André Silva at Eintracht Frankfurt. I think he scored more Bundesliga goals than Erling Haaland.
That's right, yeah.
He had an unbelievable season. Now, are they going to change to perhaps play with a front three with Ronaldo back on that
left? Because it was 4-4-2, wasn't it, at Euro 2016?
It was. But I think we might well see André Silva and Cristiano Ronaldo play in the same team. I think what is also interesting, a change since the World Cup only 3 years ago, is that Bruno Fernandes and Ruben Dias now were two of the best players in the English Premier League. They weren't there 5 years ago when Portugal won it. So how do they fit into a team where Cristiano Ronaldo has always been the star for as long as we can remember? Because now suddenly, you know, Dias and Bruno Fernandes are two of probably the best players in world football.
And if Diogo Jota had stayed fit, he probably would have been the best players in the Premier League with Liverpool this season.
Probably João Félix won't make their first 11.
And he's one of the most expensive strikers in history. Yeah, it's crazy. Okay, so the group starts with Hungary versus Portugal and the aforementioned France versus Germany. Spent enough time on the group of death. Let's go to Group C. And Chris, that means it's time for your first pick. This is a section, let's remind ourselves, and it's a kind one, I think, for the Netherlands in terms of their form going into this competition. Austria, the Netherlands, North Macedonia, the debutants, and Ukraine.
Yeah, and I think, look, on this podcast, we want to tell people about some of the other nations who are going to be involved, not just, you know, that incredible group we've spoken about. And I think because this is wide open, my first match will be Austria against North Macedonia, which is, you know, it's going to be a huge game. It's the opening game. It's this weekend on Sunday. And the winner of this, and I just wonder whether North Macedonia might surprise a few. I think Austria are going to be well organised. They are going to press. That's the way they like to play. They have David Alaba, who we're still not sure whether or where he plays for his national team. Is he at left back or is he somewhere in midfield? But I think North Macedonia have an opportunity in this section to maybe not just make history by playing in their first ever major international tournament, but maybe reaching the last 16. I mentioned that they beat Germany away in March in a FIFA World Cup qualifiers, which have, of course, already started after the delay of a year in this tournament. I think they have some very good players. They still have Goran Pandev, who we've seen in the past when it comes to some international teams, when it means so much, they find that extra percent. You can't quantify it. You can't put stats on it. Something about the emotion that will take place in those North Macedonian players and to set foot in a major tournament might just, I think, get them through.
They are the team as well that have nothing to lose with this. So they might as well go full out. I do feel that their midfield is where the questions need answering. And that's what Austria can maybe think about, because they're likely to play in a 4-2-3-1. Nikolov and Damien maybe in midfield. But they're going to have a lot of running to do. I think that is the key area for them, that midfield, and how well they manage to do there.
Yeah, I think, look, from Austria's point of view, I know someone, again, you've probably seen more than me, Rob, Sasa Kalajdzic. I think
he's the tallest player at the tournament,
yeah,
isn't he?
2 metres high, right?
Field player. Yeah, he's huge. I mean, he's a big, skinny striker. He's not mega prolific, and at times this season, Stuttgart haven't relied on him to lead the line. But at a tournament, again, he's one of those kind of players who can earn themselves cult status, I think, banging a couple of famous goals and win them games from set pieces. Austria start their campaign with their game against North Macedonia. Let's mention the other two teams in the group then, of course, which aren't the Netherlands and Ukraine, who meet in the other game on match day one in the group stage. The Dutch, were you having them dark horses, or is that right, Lindsay?
Yeah.
Can you put forward a compelling case that they're going to get through this group no problem?
Yeah, I honestly really think that they can, because Van Dijk, who will be missing, I still think that De Vries, who can replace him, that they will be a solid centre-back pairing. I honestly think that they've got enough talent here. Genie Wijnaldum will be key.
Yeah.
Luke de Jong excites me. Davy Klaassen, remember, will be probably part of this team. So I still think that the Dutch can really surprise a few people here, because they've missed the last two tournaments. They've got the hunger. I think that's what it's all about. They will have the hunger.
Yeah, I think Frank de Boer is still to win over the whole of the Dutch public. Of course, it was Ronald Koeman who really got them to this tournament. He then left for Barcelona. Frank de Boer, great success as Ajax, of course, absolute legend as a player, including in this competition. But in their final warm-up game, which they won, he played five at the back. Now, you're a brave man if you're the Dutch national team head coach and you don't play 4-3-3.
Can I counter that, actually?
And it worked.
Didn't Louis van Gaal, in the World Cup final run, played with the three at the back and the wing backs and that famous, was it Blind to Van Persie header? It worked out for them in that competition.
It does. It's one of those things in that country, because of Rinus Michels and Johan Cruyff, that
it's sacrilege to not.
Yes, but you have to get it. If you win, it's fine. But my word, if you draw or you lose, then suddenly people are out. What is interesting is, I think Ajax, by the way, have 18 players who came through their academy at this summer's Euro, the most of any club. So we should doff our hat to De Toekomst and all the work there.
They face Ukraine, of course, who didn't qualify for the 2018 World Cup, but they went unbeaten in qualifying for Euro in a section which featured the defending champions, Portugal. Chris, what's been the key to their success?
Well, of course, it's still, even though he's been a very, very successful coach for them, the fact that Andrei Shevchenko is the guy now in charge, as opposed to scoring bullet headers and fantastic long-range strikes and all the rest as a player. I think they've got two pretty outstanding players in Oleksandr Zinchenko, who may well play in midfield, but Pep Guardiola picked him in all the big games, including the UEFA Champions League final. And Ruslan Malinovsky is a very fine player at Atalanta now. And again, I think they go into this competition thinking that they're not in fantastic form. I think they've had a couple of wins over the last 12 or 13 games. But because the section is wide open, they will fancy their chances.
Let's move on to a different section then, Group E, because this is where you've picked your other key fixture, Chris. Poland, Slovakia, Spain and Sweden in Group E. Games in this group, by the way, being played in St. Petersburg and Seville. It was Bilbao originally from Spain, but now Seville. So what are you going for here, Chris?
Quite simple, I think. And it is the matches on match day two, or the game on match day two, Spain against Poland in Seville. Because, you know, We've already been talking for a while about Euro, and we've mentioned Germany and France and England and Portugal. We haven't mentioned Spain yet, and Luis Enrique did spring a real surprise when there was no Sergio Ramos even in the squad. There were no Real Madrid players in the Spain squad, which seems amazing, but that is the case. And this game is going to be fascinating because Poland, you think of Poland, everybody thinks of Robert Lewandowski. How do they supply Robert Lewandowski with the chances that he gets and he takes for Bayern? That is the question. Paulo Sousa is now their manager. He took over in January, and we can hear from him now. He knows that he has to get the best out of his star striker.
The first thing what I identify, me and my staff, it's the key players or the quality players we have up front, we need to feed them. And one of the things we identify, we don't want Robert alone, because also in this club, it's, you know, it have lots of mobility around, you know, the pitch. And we don't want him as a target man. We want him with players around him where he can combine and where he can interact, and he's not marked for two or three players and he will be alone. And with other ones like Milik, Piontek, it's the level of our strikers, they are really good. For that, we need to feed them. This it was straight away my first idea. How we want to feed them, and we want to have always superiority from the back, you know, to start that, to build it up, and looking for the spaces with lots of mobility. We want to have different lines, deep lines, and also width where we can interact. We want to see always triangles, diamonds, where we can interact, and we want to see different dynamics. Where mainly we want to risk our strikers, because where they can make the difference, and we need to feed them. It was my first idea, and we are working on that.
Poland head coach Paulo Sousa there. Speaking of Lewandowski, I know you've interviewed him before. I mean, he is, we talk about the great centre forwards we're going to have at Euro. He is right up there, isn't he?
Yeah, I think he's the world's best, isn't he, right now? And you do revolve a team around him. I think that even happened at a mega giant like Bayern Munich. He is super calm. I think that Lewandowski, probably for him, you've got to get him in the game. There's going to be a lot of pressure for the other players to try and feed him as quickly as possible. And I suppose that's the only thing, is that how can they do that if they're being, you know, high press at any point?
Well, at club level, he has Thomas Müller feeding him all the time. Robert Lewandowski scored 41 goals, setting a new single-season record in the Bundesliga. Did that in just 29 games. I mean, these are the crazy numbers that the likes of he and Messi and Ronaldo have set in recent years. And let's not forget as well that Spain have called up Aymeric Laporte, who was eligible for the French national team, now has a Spanish passport and could well be playing at centre-back. 2018 World Cup, knocked out by Brazil, top their qualifying section. They were actually in a section with Sweden, who are also in this group, Chris, semi-finalists back in 1992, reached the quarters 17 years ago. They were out in the group stage in 2016. What can we expect from Sweden this time around?
Well, listen, remember, Jana Andersson led this Swedish team to the quarterfinals of the FIFA World Cup in Russia, which broke through their ceiling in that competition, was a major, major success. In the build-up, a lot of it was about Zlatan Ibrahimovic, who we thought we'd seen the end of him in terms of a Sweden shirt. Then he got a recall, and then he got injured, unfortunately. So he is not going to be here. We're not going to have that Zlatan factor. They do have some very young, exciting players. Alexander Isak, I think, is going to be a key player. Dejan Kulusevski, who, you know, Juventus spent a lot of money on, flitted this season in a difficult campaign for that club domestically and in Europe, but certainly showed signs of what a huge talent he is. We know that they are always, ever since really, I think it was Roy Hodgson who first brought 4-4-2 to Swedish football. They are never, or they are very rarely, heavily beaten by anybody. And I think that makes them a dangerous tournament team. They will play 4-4-2, I expect, and they have the quality, definitely, to win a game. And because those third best ranked teams go through, 3 points, 4 points, as we saw 5 years ago, might just be enough for a team to go through to the last 16.
A lot of people putting forward the case that maybe they are a more united group, a more evenly distributed team without Ibrahimovic in it. They did very well without him at the World Cup in 2018, reaching the quarters. And it was interesting hearing Janne Andersen, their head coach, talking about Victor Lindelof as one of the best defenders in the world. He will start for them, of course, the Manchester United man. Slovakia make up that section as well, Lindsay, and they did relatively well in 2016, lost in the round of 16 to Germany. What can we see from them, do you think?
Yeah, Slovakia, I think, are a bit more unpredictable. They will keep things very, very tight, the way that they play. And they'll be difficult, I think, for teams to break down. I can't see them going with a back three. I think they'll go with a back four, won't they? And, yeah, I just think that they will be a team that can frustrate.
Well, Group E begins with Poland versus Slovakia and then Spain versus Sweden as well. Right, it's time for my picks. And my two are coming from Group B. I'm going to start with Belgium versus Russia. This game being played in St. Petersburg on Saturday at 8 o'clock CEST in the evening. Starting with Russia, of course, this is a team that, as World Cup hosts, let's not forget, in 2018, really surprised everybody. I think there was a lot of dread, maybe, in the Russian media about how the team was going to perform, given how disappointing they were at Euro 2016 when they were dumped out in the group stage. But they went on to reach the quarterfinals. I think there has been a clamouring as well for goalkeeper Igor Akinfeyev, who was so key in that tournament, made that famous penalty save in the round of 16 to see off Spain with his leg. But he has not returned to the fold. The return of Artem Zubar as well, left out of a couple of squads, back in the squad, is absolutely pivotal. He was a cult hero, really, at that World Cup. Big guy up front. He could cause an ageing defence, Lindsay, in that Belgian team some problems. Because there are concerns around this Belgium group now going into this Euro.
Yeah, and I think Kevin De Bruyne's injury looks like it could be pretty serious. I mean, it's been played down at the minute, but he will be a huge loss. And I think Russia is going to be a really tough one for them because Russia will defend for their lives. They are really, really solid at the back. They will just wait for their chance and try and take it. It could be the game that just means that it's a big question mark as well for Martinez, Roberto Martinez, and what he decides to do to set up against this team, because they really will defend solidly.
I think it will be 3-4-3, which is something that has been a success for Belgium over the last probably two and a half years. I think that Belgium come into this as the number one ranked team in the world in the FIFA World Rankings. And it was interesting, and it was something that I do actually agree with, because so much about football now is who lifts the trophy at the end of the day, which of course is the main thing in football, is to win. But also I think you also have to celebrate mini successes, if you like it. And under Roberto Martinez, Belgium have reached the top of the world rankings and have reached the semi-finals of a major tournament like they did in Russia. And I think you have to, so much is about this golden generation and are they going to win something. But even if they don't, I still think what they have achieved, this group already, has been very impressive. Mm. I think Lindsay's right about De Bruyne, almost certain to miss the first game, which
He's getting a mask actually from the same place where Jan Vertonghen got his when he had a facial injury.
Might just be one of the reasons you've picked this match, I don't know, with Russia. but also, again, you mentioned what happened 3 years ago. I was at that game when they knocked Spain out in the penalty shootout in Moscow. It's the loudest I've ever been in the stadium. They call that the foot of God now. We think of Maradona and that, certainly in England. But in Russia, the foot of God is Igor Akinfeyev saving that penalty and sending them through. If they can capture some of that public, mass public support that they had in 2018 in St. Petersburg for these group games, Russia will be very dangerous.
Eden Hazard, of course, coming into this off the back of 2 years injured, basically, and he's had a new thigh problem ahead of the tournament. But Romelu Lukaku, one of the best strikers in the world, I think he's firmly established himself as that with Inter over the past couple of years, and in particular this season, helping them to ending their long wait for a Serie A title. They won all 10 games in qualifying as well, Belgium. Let's not forget, in a section which featured Russia. The other game I'm going for from this group is Denmark versus Finland. Chris, do you want to get into Finland a little bit? Because this is their first ever appearance, like North Macedonia, at a major finals. They've never reached the World Cup, despite the fact of being a country that has produced some great players over the years.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to give away my age too much, but Jari Litmanen was one of my favourite players growing up. You think of what he did at Ajax in the back end of his career at Liverpool. You think of Sami Hyypiä, one of the best defenders of his generation, never got to grace a major stage in terms of the international game, and this group have, and I think Marco Carneva has done an exceptional job there. They are very much a team. Timo Pukki up front, their centre forward, is their main star in terms of the goals, but Carneva was the Finland under 21 coach 11-12 years ago. He qualified. Many of this group actually were in that team, and they qualified for the final tournament at under 21 level. And that was a big success for Finnish football. And now, with many of those players, they've now come through the ranks together. And this makes them a very interesting team, particularly, you think geographically, the matches are in Copenhagen and they're in St. Petersburg. Now, I don't know exactly what the travel restrictions are going to be, but they're not playing too far away from home. And this tournament now, because it's been 12 months delayed, has only added to the excitement that they are finally making that bow on the international stage. And that, as I mentioned with North Macedonia, that has to give them that extra little bit somewhere. You can't quite measure it, but it makes them very dangerous.
There was a wild pitch invasion when they qualified in Helsinki in that win over Liechtenstein. Lukas Radetzky, the goalkeeper, who's another one of their absolutely most important players, says he wants the 15th of November, the day they qualified, to be made a national holiday. They finished second in the section with Italy and finished above Greece, keeping six clean sheets in qualifying. But I really do like Denmark. I'm putting forward the case that I think they will have a good tournament, not only because of their good defence.
You think they're one of the dark horses, right?
I do, yeah. Copenhagen may well work in their favour, of course. So in that group, Group B, it will start with Denmark versus Finland and Belgium versus Russia as well. Coming up, we're heading to Italy ahead of their opening match, and we've got an exclusive interview with Wales superstar Gareth Bale.
This is the official Euro 2020 podcast in association with Qatar Airways.
I'm Rob Daly, and I'm previewing UEFA Euro 2020 alongside my co-presenter, European football expert Chris Parrott, and our reporter, Lindsay Hooper. Just a reminder, there are lots of different digital games that you can get involved in for Euro 2020, including fantasy football. That's at euro2020.com. I've actually picked out, as I think we should do some bargains of good players you want. I know Lindsay's been like frantically doing her team. You haven't even done yours yet.
Well, no, because I was waiting for this podcast to steal the information from you two and then pick. But you, Rob, 5 years ago, you won
the in-house UEFA one.
Yeah, on the greatest final match.
It was the greatest moment of my life, and I'll tell you how I did it.
Go on.
Because everyone had France Portugal players, and everyone had all the France players. Well, I thought, well, let's just go all in on Portugal, and I jumped over. Everyone had clean sheets coming out my ears because they won 1-0.
You didn't pick Ed Air, did you?
No, I didn't have Ed Air. I didn't go that far. I had Ronaldo and was crying like everybody else when he went off injured very early in the game. But we'll see who can win our one on the Euro show this season. Don't forget to get your team done on the app. You may well be looking at Gareth Bale, by the way, 9.5 million euros in the game. He starred on the world stage throughout the last decade, but can he inspire Wales once again, this time at Euro 2020? This is their second finals appearance following that famous run to the semi-final 5 years ago, and the Real Madrid winger who's been on loan at Spurs says it's an amazing achievement for such a small country.
Yeah, massive. I think if you look to our history, I don't think we've actually qualified properly before for any major tournament, so for now to do it, to do two in a row, yeah, it was a massive achievement for us. And like we've always said from when I started, we want to qualify for a major tournament, but then the next step is qualifying for multiple ones. So we're going in the right direction, we're doing the correct things, and hopefully this is kind of a stepping stone for further things in the future that we can create now and make it a regular occurrence for Wales being in major tournaments.
To go back to Euro 2016, 5 years ago now, what was the standout memory for you, if you had to pick one?
For me personally, I feel like the Russia game was the biggest and the best game that we played there. I know everyone will revert to the Belgium game, but I think for me, after coming off a loss against England, knowing that we had to beat Russia, and I think not just having to beat Russia, but the way we did it, I think for me that's the best football arguably that I've been involved in when we played for Wales. I think we dominated from start to finish, got a clean sheet, scored three goals. Under the pressure, the fact that if we lost, pretty much we were out. So yeah, for me that was a massive moment. Obviously, we went on to have great moments as well after, but for me that's the one game that really sticks out the most.
Ramsey, poked through, Bale onside. There's number three. That should be shot down for Wales. Gareth Bale's third goal of this European Championship.
it's been great to have so many youngsters come through, and I think obviously the older generation now, I think we've helped them come through. We've kind of given them that confidence. We've kind of let them know how we do things here, and trying to rub off on them and give them that winning mentality that we have. So they've been fantastic coming through, all of them, and hopefully they can keep continuing to give us that energy, and us old ones can give that experience.
What are the expectations now for this team?
I think the first and foremost, we can't really look further than getting out of the group. I think we know it's going to be three very difficult games, like it was the first time round, and we have to concentrate on trying to get out of the group first. I think I know it's one of those cliche things, but you do have to take it one match at a time, and the aim is to get out of the group and go from there.
And for you personally, do you feel you're back at the level you need to be at going into major tournaments?
Yeah, definitely. I feel like I'm match fit. I'm ready. I'm sharp. Scoring goals. So I'm confident in my levels going into this summer. And still a little bit of a way to go yet. But looking forward to getting to Azerbaijan and getting the tournament started.
And finally, you've made no secret of what it means for you to play for Wales. Does that passion still burn as much as it always has?
Yeah, always. Whenever I come away with Wales, everyone sees how happy I am. How passionate I am, and whenever I cross that white line with a Wales shirt on, I will always give 100%.
Gareth Bale speaking there, the Wales superstar, who actually did end up with 16 goals for Spurs this season. He will captain the side and was a key player for them in 2016, as we heard there. Very interesting hearing from him. He's clearly confident that he's in the right shape. And Lindsay, it's something you've touched upon, rightly so, a few times in the show, about how the extra year has helped and hindered some. I definitely feel it's helped Gareth Bale, because think about 2019-20, he wasn't getting a kick at Real Madrid.
Yeah, and the figures that you talk about that he got in the Premier League, he got over a very short period of time. If you count up the minutes, Premier League minutes to ratio of goals, it's really impressive. So he comes into this in form, back in shape, as he talks about, he's always got a smile on his face when he's playing in this Wales squad. Lots of people see this as his happy place. And as captain as well, with that extra responsibility, I think he really will lead by example. I see him getting goals in this, but it is crucial that he has good players around him. It isn't down to one player. You have to be more than that.
Beat Belgium famously in the quarterfinals, that 3-1 win, and then lost to the eventual winners, Portugal. Let's not forget, in the semi-final, second in their qualifying group with Croatia. So we've not touched upon Switzerland yet, Lindsay. What are their, Chris was saying, their expectations are to get out of the group stage. They reached the round of 16 last time out in this competition. What do you reckon to them?
I think Switzerland will see this as an opportunity for a tournament to go that next level. And I think there is a bit more pressure on them. They've had this brilliant decade of football. They've brought through a lot of youth talent through their ranks. I mean, it's such a tough group. Turkey and Italy, I think, will top this. And I think it's a big ask for Wales and Switzerland to try and get out of this group. But we might be proven wrong, hadn't we?
We are going to have dedicated UEFA reporters at every host city during Euro 2020. And we're now heading to Italy ahead of the opening match as they prepare to take on the aforementioned Turkey at the Stadio Olimpico in Rome. Paolo Menicucci is in Italy for us now. Paolo, great to have you on the show.
Thank you for hosting me. Very nice.
Paolo, I understand there's great excitement around this Italy team at the moment. Obviously, there was the disappointment of not qualifying for the FIFA World Cup in 2018. But given what Roberto Mancini has done, how optimistic are you and the country about their prospects of this competition?
Well, Mancini did an incredible job since taking over. As you remember, the failing to qualify for the World Cup was almost a national tragedy here, something that no one will forget. But he changed the team completely, like the mentality. He worked with, he had the great confidence to play with youngsters. He changed the mentality, playing a completely different kind of football based on possession, on technical midfielders, and always trying to impose their games. And results kept coming. And I was watching some stats today, like Italy have not conceded goals in their last 8 games. But don't be fooled by this. It's not the usual defensive Italy that defend well. It's not because they are a defensive team. They are playing good football, attacking, and still remaining solid. So there is almost all the ingredients are there for playing in a very good tournament.
Paolo, it's Lindsay here. I was just wondering about the squad reveal. Roberto Mancini decided to do it in a very different way. What did you make of that?
Do you want the honest answer or the
of course.
Right one? That show was not my favorite one, honestly, on TV, like waiting until midnight with a lot of strange things happening, and it was quite popular.
It was quite
anyway.
Fun, Paolo, don't you think? You had the whole squad there in a TV studio, all in pretty smart suits, live music, bands, a presenter. I mean, we don't do it in England, but I can tell it's not your bag.
I was not really. I must admit.
Why did they do that? Why did they do it that way, Paolo? Is it just, you know, the public want it like that?
Don't ask me, please. I would have done differently. But okay, it was fun. Forget about it. Let's talk about football now.
Could we speak about? You mentioned some of the youngsters that Roberto Mancini has promoted and backed. Federico Chiesa, in terms of Italy as an attacking threat, it was a tough season for Juventus, but he had a good personal end to the campaign. Do you think this could be a tournament when he really shines?
Absolutely, yeah. He was a great crescendo in Italy with Juventus. Like the beginning was a bit like that, but in the end it was like decisive in every game, and it was could be his tournament. But the problem is that he's facing the competition of Berardi for the place in the starting 11. They are waving every game for a place in the starting 11 as the right side of the attack, Chiesa and Berardi. In the last friendly game, Berardi started and scored. So I'm not sure that Chiesa will be in the starting 11 from against Turkey.
It seems like the squad's got so many great attacking players like Immobile and Insigne and Belotti as well. But I think it's probably key to mention how important are the two central midfielders? I mean, do you expect Jorginho and Verratti to line up in that Azzurri midfield?
Verratti is recovering from an injury, and I'm not sure that he will be in the team for Turkey. He should definitely be there for the second game against Switzerland. But he's a key player for this Italy. Mancini didn't hesitate 1 second to wait for him, even if he was injured, because he's so important for this team. Mancini plays with three central midfielders. Two of them are alternating a deep-lying playmaker role, Jorginho and Verratti. One of the other is Barella, who is more running towards the opposition goal and scoring too. And it's a system that paid great dividends for Italy. Barella especially was so great with Inter this season. The midfield trio is probably the key of this national team. They are really doing great together.
Paolo, thank you very much for joining us. I know you've got to go because you're going to be interviewing someone.
Yeah, we are going with a newcomer because Pessina is replacing the injured sense in the squad, and we're going to interview him immediately.
So thanks to Paolo Menicucci, our UEFA reporter based with the Italy team throughout the course of the tournament. It's not a bad job, is it? Coming around Italy, based with the national team at a Euro.
Doesn't Paolo just transport you to Italy immediately? Love
it. He's going to be having a great time. And Italy are one of the favourites for the tournament, given the players at their disposal. I think it's time to put Lindsay and Chris on the spot here properly and call. They've talked about their favourites, but who do they think are going to win the competition? And I'm going to put Chris on the spot first.
Do you know what? It's not just because Paolo has just bent my arm, but I think Italy might just surprise a few and go all of the way.
Lindsay.
Ooh, I think it will be France. I think they will be world and European champions.
Conte, Pogba, Griezmann,
Rob,
Mbappe.
Go on.
I'm going to go for Portugal, actually. I am going for Portugal. I'm going to go that they're going to defend their title. I think their squad is absolutely... crazy. Look at attacking options. Ronaldo, André Silva, Pedro Gonçalves, Bernardo Silva, we haven't even mentioned, Gonçalo Guedes, Rafa Silva, João Felix, and the man who's my player to watch for the tournament, that brings it nicely to that, Diogo Jota of Liverpool, who has had a bit of a break in the season because of that injury, but when he was playing in that Liverpool attack, was scoring goals, was looking so dangerous, producing big moments in his debut season with a team that were the Premier League champions, and showing his versatility. And I think that will be key in this team when they work out. And you see teams do this at major tournaments, work out what is our best 11. They might not know it by the end of the group stage, but they'll know it by the final. And where does Diogo Jota play? I think he will start in that attack to accommodate the goals and perhaps the age of Cristiano Ronaldo in that team. So players to watch out for. I'm going Diogo Jota. Lindsay, who you have him?
I'll stick with France, seeing as I've tipped them for the title. And I think Ousmane Dembele. I think everyone talks about Griezmann, we talk about Mbappe, and I think it will be another France player who lights up this tournament. I think Dembele could get quite a few goals.
Chris?
Well, I'm going to go with Mason Mount for England.
Is he definitely going to start, Chris?
Possibly not, but I think by the end of the tournament, I think he will be if England go deep. I hope he starts. I think I was lucky enough to see Chelsea quite a bit live at the back end of the season, and Mason Mount in a team of superstars was the most exciting Chelsea player. And of course, he's just won the Champions League. I think he should start. And I think he will, because Gareth Southgate knows him so well. And I think he's going to have a huge summer.
A load of right backs and loads of attacking midfielders and Harry Kane. I think that's what most England fans want to see.
Fit those into an 11.
Chris, thank you. Lindsay, thank you very much. It's been a joy to have you on the show today.
Thank you very much for having me.
And thank you at home for listening to the official Euro 2020 podcast sponsored by Qatar Airways. Remember to subscribe to us with your favourite podcast provider, and you can listen live on Euro2020.com and on the app each and every match night straight after the last game of the day.
Yeah, where we're going to have a panel of expert football guests to react to the matches and, of course, to look ahead to the next day's fixtures, because the games come thick and fast once the action begins on Friday. In-depth analysis. We'll be joined by a host of former Euro winners as well, and we'll have exclusive interviews just like the one that Paolo was talking about doing when he was speaking to us a few moments ago.
So our first live show is on Friday night, straight after the opening match. It is Turkey against Italy at the Stadio Olimpico in Rome. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on Friday night.
Thanks for listening to the official Euro 2020 podcast in association with Qatar Airways.